Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to 12 Nation. So sorry for the delay. My partner Colin's probably been waiting for about 2 hours, but you know how life is. When stuff gets goofy, it gets goofy. Colin, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Don't even want to talk about it. Let's talk football, man.
All right.
So, first, before we go into your Longhorns' amazing battle with USC, let's talk about these daggone Kansas Jayhawks. And for anybody, we will put this on the site later, and this is our actual podcast website, so you could actually call into the show and talk to me and Colin, or you can download it. You go to the link at big12nation.com. You can download it at any time and listen to us at work. All you need is a smartphone. Very easy. You get tired of other people's, you know, nonsense on the radio, just download us. But Kansas, they can't seem to get it together, Colin. And it's just like, you know, all right, you lose at home to Central. You go on the road to lose at Ohio. But to me, it's just like, man, you're in the Big 12. Come on. Like, you got to win those games if you want to show some type of progress. Like, when you're out of conference, non-Power 5 schedule, and then lose the rest, and then I can make a case for David Betty to keep his job, and hopefully they still give him one more year. But it's just like, come on, man. Like, what are y'all doing? And I know for sure there's been plenty of coaches that have emailed him, sent him messages and letters saying they could help out, and, you know, he's probably not responded, but, you know, at some point he needs some type of help because this is getting goofy. You can't stop Ohio's offense? Come on, man.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, this game was out of reach by the end of the fourth – or by the end of the third quarter. There was – at one point in the game, Kansas had the ball on the two-yard line, maybe even less than the two-yard line, and they threw the ball twice in a row. Like, they have very little confidence against in their O-line, especially considering that they were playing against Ohio. And interesting fact, they've now lost 42 straight road games dating back to, I think, 2011. If they lose on the road at Iowa State, at TCU, and at Texas this season, they'll officially have the worst road losing streak in the history of college football.
Wow.
So I'm kind of rooting for them to not have that record, but I don't see, with the way that they've been playing, how they would possibly beat Iowa State, TCU, and Texas on the road.
Yeah, I don't know. And Texas is not going to go for it this year like they did last year where they went up and laid an egg. They could have blew that team out. That
exactly.
Game last year drove me crazy. I wanted to yell to Sterling Gilbert, hey, man, just throw the ball down the field every play because the DBs can't cover our receivers. But that's another story for another day. But I don't know. David Betty, looking like he's going to – that hot seat might get a little hotter if they don't win any more games this year because that means they're going backwards,
yeah.
Not forwards.
Yeah, at this point, I'm not really sure what a Kansas head coach is supposed to do. Building up a team from essentially nothing where they're at right now is incredibly difficult. And, like, what's your selling point for Kansas? Like, we have a really good football team – or we have a really good basketball team – we play in the Big 12. That's about it. You know, you're in Lawrence, Kansas, which I assume most people have never even heard of, let alone been to. And you're playing against – I mean, you're playing against great competition. You know, you're playing against the rest of the Big 12. But because of that, you're going to get blown out in most games. It's hard to recruit when you know you're probably going to lose.
Right. And to add to that, it's like, you know, I guess the only recruiting pitch you could tell is like, hey, man, you go to Texas, you may not play 2 or 3 years. You come here, if you're a 4 or 5-star recruit, you'll start. I guess that's the only thing you could sell them. And by your fourth year, you should definitely have a chance to make a bowl game if you're a legit recruit.
Exactly. Right.
Right. So let's just hop around the league. Texas Tech, before we get into the Texas USC, Texas Tech. Got their revenge on Arizona State. I feel like if Cliff Kingsbury can go to University of Houston next week and they can win a game and they can get out of conference or take care of the out of conference 3-0, I feel like he could get 3 conference games. He could get Kansas. He could probably get Iowa State. and then he probably could find a way to get one more win at home. Well, he'd get Baylor for sure. So I feel like if he does that and takes care of business next week, he can take the Red Raiders to another bowl game, and I think that would secure him for another year in Lubbock.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought that they'd be in a little bit of trouble after Mahomes left, but the new quarterback that they have, Shimonek, he's the prototype Texas Tech quarterback, you know, pretty immobile in the pocket, but he throws those short passes like no other. He was 37 of 50 against Arizona State for almost 550 yards and 6 touchdowns. So, you know, Tech is doing what they've always been doing, putting up a lot of points, not so much on defense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's no, and then they only won by one touchdown this time, so that shows that that defensive coordinator is trying to improve. And I really want to give Cliff Kingsbury a lot of respect for that, because a lot of people fired a defensive coordinator, and he stood up to the media at Big 12 Media Day, and he says, I don't believe in throwing my guys under the bus. I believe we have a process, and it takes 3 or 4 years, give the guy some chance. So that's awesome as an assistant coach to have a guy like that that has your back. Also, a couple years ago, ESPN gave him a hard time because of the way he went at Brett Bielema, but I have no time. I have no problem with the way he went at Brett Bielema. If you're going to talk trash about me passing the ball because you just want to run it, that's not my fault. Beat me one-on-one. So.
Right. Texas Tech, their defense actually played pretty well in the first half. They led 35-17 at the half, but their defense just wasn't clicking in the second half, and Arizona State tied it up at 45, but, you know, Tech managed to pull it out.
Right, and you got to remember, it's hard to keep defenses like that contained and just keep throwing the ball. Most teams that beat those teams are running teams. Like a couple years ago when Stanford beat the crap out of Arizona State, they had McCaffrey, and they ran the ball right down their throat. And every time they threw an interception, Stanford just said, okay, I'll just take 7 more minutes off the clock, and I'll beat you 42-0.
Exactly.
So that's how you beat them. Now, let's hop over to Oklahoma State. My goodness, those dudes are some animals up there in Stillwater. They are
incredible to watch.
Right. They're making it very, very interesting to watch. You go on the road and put 49 points up on Pitt, you're legit. You're legit. South Alabama, competed with Ole Miss. You know, they destroyed South Alabama at South Alabama. They went on the road. I'm ready. I'm absolutely ready. I can't wait till they play Oklahoma, Texas. This is going to be a fun, even Kansas State, because Kansas State is going to fight them in West Virginia. This is going to be a fun Big 12 season. I mean,
absolutely.
Just talk about this Oklahoma State team. They're ridiculous.
Yeah, the tempo that they have is just brutal. They're snapping the ball with maybe 10, 15 seconds tops off the play clock. Almost every play that they do is a RPO, that run pass option. Like, you blink and their receiver is already 15 yards down the field. In the first half, the first drive even, Oklahoma State, basically they took 2 minutes off the clock and scored a touchdown. But the play right before they scored, the camera panned over to the Pitt defense, and every single defender had their hands on their hips. They looked tired already after 2 minutes of the game. OSU's offense is just insane. They had 4 wide receivers catch over 100 yards. It's been 12 years since that last happened in the NCAA. And Mason Rudolph, once again, putting up insane numbers. He threw for over 400 yards and 5 touchdowns in the first half of this game.
Ridiculous, man. Ridiculous. And I mean, and that's, to me, I think that's going to be the Big 12 Nation game of the week this week when TCU has the Stillwater to play them. That is going to be fun. I mean, that's ridiculous. This is fun. This is what college football is about. I can't wait to see. And I mean, the Big 12 is looking good. I mean, we got wins over the Pac-12. I mean, Texas Tech is a middle range Big 12 team, same thing as Arizona State. Texas usually is a top 3 Big 12 team. We won't know till the end of the season, but they played with the best Pac-12 team and honestly had a chance to beat them. And then TCU Well, forget TCU. Just talk about Oklahoma State going to Pitt. At Pitt, a great ACC team, putting the beat down on them. That's the last team to beat Clemson was Pitt. So, I mean, I don't want to overhype the conference, but, damn, this looks really good early in the season, and I really hope it continues, man. They are
I think with teams like Oklahoma State and OU, it's really hard to overhype them. Like, Mason Rudolph, he's looked great in the first few games. In this game, I think I actually saw if Oklahoma State continues putting up the offensive numbers that they have been, I think I saw potentially a Heisman moment from Mason Rudolph. There was 3 minutes left in the first quarter, and 3rd and 11, Mason Rudolph scrambled out of the pocket, broke 3 tackles, threw just a strike down the field as he got hit, and the wide receiver broke a tackle and scored from 70 yards out. Mason Rudolph, you know, I didn't think going into the season that he was going to make such a big step up from where he was last year, but he looks like if he continues putting up these numbers against Big 12 teams, that he could be a legitimate Heisman contender.
Right, exactly. And then I want to jump to TCU real quick. TCU didn't get off to a good start. They played around SMU, but SMU is like their rival. And I hate to say little brother, but it's kind of like that. It would be like if Texas State played UT every year. You would expect Texas to win easy, but SMU came out with a chip on their shoulder, fought TCU. They had to lead for a while, but by halftime, TCU took over. Kenny Hill balled out, and I think they ended up winning 56-36 or something like that. So just well-put-together game for the TCU, and I can't wait to see them playing Stillwater, as I said a little earlier.
Yeah, and I think the score is a little misleading. TCU only won by 20, but SMU had a couple trick plays early. They did a double pass. They did a flea flicker on the first drive of the game. Both got them into range to score. And then TCU fumbled twice to give SMU good field position. So SMU got out to a 19-7 lead. But TCU came back and kept scoring a bunch. And, yeah, you can chalk it up to a rivalry game. SMU hung in there longer than you'd think. But really, I think if you watch the game and looked at all of the plays – TCU dominated SMU from the beginning, but SMU got a little tricky and found a way to get some momentum swinging their way early.
Would you consider Kenny Hill one of the top three quarterbacks in the league?
In the Big 12, yeah, I think he's probably right behind Mayfield and Rudolph as of right now.
That's what I think. I think he's definitely top three. I haven't made my mind up yet. Whether I want to give number four to Ellinger, even though he's a freshman and he did fumble, but I think overall he's playing very well for a freshman. West Virginia's quarterback, I think, is a solid too. So don't know. Iowa State is, they're playing better, but they don't have like a solid quarterback. I think give, Coach Campbell a couple of years and he will develop some type of quarterback there. And Ames up there in Ames, Iowa, but as of right now, I see those three being the toughies in the league. And then we'll figure out who number four is, in the weeks to come.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's just go over the other scores. Iowa State won on the road against a MAC team like they're supposed to. They're 2-1. They're going in the right direction. It depends on what Matt Campbell can do. If he can sneak some wins at home, he should be able to get his team to a bowl game. We will see, though. Kansas State, let's talk about that real quick. This was the one where we were kind of like, it's even. I said, you never know with Vandy because they're a good team. They beat Tennessee last year. And it was right around what I thought, a low-scoring game. They both run the ball, and Vandy edged K-State 14-7.
Yeah, that game was kind of painful to watch. The offenses were not moving very well at all. Right around the start of the second quarter, it looked like it was going to be a good game. There was a blown coverage. They got Vandy down to the 4, so they scored. And then Jesse Ertz did his best Colin Klein impression, ran for 57 yards on one drive to get Kansas State's only score. But he threw a pick early in the fourth quarter. That led to Vanderbilt scoring what would be the game-winning touchdown. Both offenses were struggling the whole game. The defenses were playing well, but the offenses were failing to execute at times when they really should have. So I think Kansas State, they'll bounce back. Snyder is a great coach and can get them to look past this loss. But it was a good effort by Vanderbilt. No disrespect to Kansas State at all, but it was a tough game to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest with you, you know, Kansas State, it's always hard to win in Manhattan, Kansas, so they'll find a way to win some games that people don't think they'll win, and they'll get to the postseason again. But as I thought, that would be a good team, and it's looking good, honestly, for the, like I said earlier, for the conference all around. They can't hit us with that out-of-conference schedule. You guys don't have a conference champion change, so you're left out of the playoff. They can't pull that crap anymore because we've played Pac-12 teams, we've played SEC teams, we went on the road, and we beat Big Ten teams. So that, you know, that conversation about out-of-conference is out the door. Oklahoma State went on the road and beat an ACC team. So that out-of-conference crap, I don't want to hear it come December and come to playoff. It should be a Big 12 team in there. Even if they have one loss, it should be a Big 12 team in that playoff.
Yeah, I completely agree. The Big 12 out-of-conference schedule this year has been phenomenal, especially compared to, you know, the traditionally bad out-of-conference schedules like the SEC has. And to be completely honest, we need it with – usually there's only two, three teams competing for a spot up at the top of the national spotlight for the college football playoff. And with, like you said, Oklahoma State going to Pitt, that was a huge win. And OU last week going into Columbus was a huge win as well.
Exactly. So let's get to it. I mean, USC versus your Texas Longhorns. I'm really not going to say nothing. I'm going to let you fire away at this. I will say this. I was listening to the Horn today, and a lot of people were complaining. They said they need a running back or a running game. A couple other critiques. I personally, and I'm just going to leave it at this, and I'll let you chip away. I personally think Todd Orlando, Tom Herman, and Coach Beck had a perfect game plan. They kept in there, they hung, and they did what they were supposed to do in the fourth quarter and take a lead with less than a minute left and sneak out of USC. This would not have been a smart, you know, game if you want to gamble and fight and match USC touchdown for touchdown or try and force certain things that aren't there. I think they had the perfect game plan. Win with a couple seconds left, get out of there. The only problem was you can't leave that Darnold kid with that many seconds left to drive down the score. And even when I saw it was 40 seconds left, I said, damn it, this is what they're going to find a way to win. The only thing I could disagree with is that I wish they would have milked the clock a little more and then tried to find a way to score like 20, 19 seconds left. Other than that, I think it was a great game plan, but I'll let you fire away.
Well, first off, both teams had less than 75 rushing yards each. The defenses were playing amazing. I'll get to the offensive side in a little bit, but the Texas defense looked as good as the 2005 National Championship defense. They were playing out of their minds. I think even the announcer said at one point that it looked like the defense was just playing at an unsustainably high level, but they managed to perform the entire game. I totally thought that at some point Darnold would find his rhythm and they'd start to tear apart the Texas defense, but Malik Jefferson in the middle finally looked like what everyone thought he was going to look like coming out of high school. The fact that USC only had 17 points in regulation was incredible, and really that number should have been a little lower. UT shanked a punt early in the game that gave USC the ball at the 37, which, again, if you're giving the ball to Darnold at the 37, that's basically giving them a touchdown. Then there was that weird play at the end of the half where UT was in prevent defense and they threw it underneath and got some blocks. And then Darnold obviously set up some magic at the end to get that game-tying field goal. But
I want to talk
Texas
about
defense.
Let me interrupt you real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because on College Game Day, and watch on ESPN, these guys are criticizing Butch Jones for the way he had his defense set up against Florida and how Florida won the last seconds. But then in the back of my mind, I'm sitting there, I'm like, did you not watch the USC game? You may put that prevent up sometimes and still get smoked on that defense if a guy lays the right block and he can take the right angle. So that argument is out the door. But go ahead. I just wanted to say it was just an amazing play made by amazing team and receiver. So that's all I want.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree. That running back that USC has is a phenomenal athlete, and he probably would have torn up the Texas defense if the D-line hadn't been playing so well and kept him contained the entire game. Because everyone got a chance to see what he can do in the open field when he got that little dump off. The offensive play calling. So Texas defense played absolutely incredibly well. The play calling on offense was atrocious, and in my opinion, Tim Beck should be fired. He just does not look like he has any idea what the team's offensive strengths are. Chris Warren, the running back, averaged 10 yards per carry last game. San Jose State, so the numbers are a little inflated, but still 10 yards per carry last game. He got 4 touches against USC. 4 touches per game that averaged 10 yards per game. It's just crazy.
Colin, tell you what they were saying on the horn though this morning. They're saying that supposedly Tom Herman says this is not a we don't do gamers, because a lot of times they had that with Charlie Strong and the other thing, you know, Gerardo's a gamer. He said, we don't have gamers. We have all practice players. So what they're saying is they think that Warren must not practice hard. And they said he doesn't have as much talent as other people. And he said, so they figured that the Texas coaches went with Sam Ellinger because they figured that was the best run option. Now, people's argument is going into this this week, they need to come out with a running back or a running game or something of some sort. You know, put Gerard Hurd back there if you need to.
Yeah, I agree. Just the whole philosophy of no gamers, to me, doesn't make any sense. Like, outside of the coaching staff, nobody cares about practice. You know,
right.
The media doesn't care. The fans don't care. Like, what you do in practice, whatever. Just get ready for the game. Because the game is what matters. And so Chris Warren might suck in practice, but just look at any game film. From a game, not from a practice, any game film. And he is the best running back we've had in a very long time. I personally think that if he is healthy, he's better than Deontay Foreman was last year.
But now, that's saying a lot.
I know, and I honestly believe that, though. I don't know why the coaching staff can't see that. If you look at game film, the dude is a playmaker. He's absolutely amazing. The fact that he got 4 rushes against USC is just horrific. There's also some other play calls that were pretty ridiculous to me. Very early in the game, the first possession the Texans had after stopping USC on a 4th down, they get the ball 4th-and-2 at the 17. And not only did they go for it, which in a game where points were at a premium, you should have kicked the field goal there. But not only do they decide to go for it, but this is the first Texas drive of the game, and they do a QB power with Sam Ellinger, true freshman quarterback, first drive of the game. What are you doing? Like, that's just a terrible call. You want to get the ball out of his hand and establish a rhythm with other players just so that he can kind of take some time to relax on this enormous stage. And they ran the ball with him, and they lost 3 yards and turned the ball over. The rest of the game, play calling was okay. There were some things I disagreed with, but nothing major until double overtime, play of the game, when Texas decided to run a second straight QB power play from the 3-yard line with a true freshman quarterback. Chris Warren, he'd only had 4 touches up to that point, but he was averaging 4 yards a carry. Colin Johnson, the wide receiver, had 7 incredible receptions, had been the playmaker
for
the
awesome game.
Yeah, either hand the ball off or throw a fade on 2nd-and-2 from the 3-yard line. It's not that hard. You don't keep the ball in Ellinger's hands. Like, to me, the only rationale for that would be Herman wanted Ellinger to score on a run, game-winning touchdown like Vince did. That's, in my mind, that's the only reason why you would decide to run the same play 2 times in a row, goal line offense. I'm still almost speechless. Just, it didn't make any sense to me. That call was crazy. The Texas team played great, showed up way more than I thought they would, but, oh my God, I still can't get over how crazy the play calling was for that whole game.
Yeah. I figured you would have something to say about it, but, you know, if they could have just got out of there, man, I just wish they would have strategized the time. Ignore that warning. But if they could have just, you know, got a couple more seconds on the clock and just ran it one time before they threw that last pass, that's the only thing I disagree with. The only other problem I see is Ellinger fumbling on the goal line, but, you know, some people say he shouldn't have gave it to him there. He should have. He could have held on to it. I guess I'm not as upset, Colin, because he was a freshman. So I'm not. I just can't get that mad.
I don't blame Ellinger for fumbling that ball at all. You know, his only other experience doing those kind of QB power plays is high school. And in high school, you don't have defenders once someone's got you wrapped up flying in and trying to strip the ball out every time. In high school, all you're worried about is just getting the guy on the ground. And so it's really hard to blame Ellinger for that decision. But, you know, if both of us can rationalize, hey, maybe we shouldn't give the ball to our true freshman quarterback on the goal line, you'd think that the coaches would be able to do that too. Just crazy to me.
Right. No, I was saying not only that, I mean, you don't have a guy that's 6'2", 260 pounds that runs a 4.3 coming at you either.
Exactly.
You know, you're dealing with a whole different animal coming at you at that time. So, I mean, it's so many things you could go over. I mean, I just would have loved to seen your reaction when they got the interception to tie it at halftime and then the next play.
Yeah, I feel like I'm being really pessimistic with this kind of overview of the game, and it's probably just because, you know, as a Texas fan, we came so close to being able to pull off that upset, and I would probably be, if we had won that game, I probably would have been, you know, shouting to the heavens that UT is back, Texas football is back, but not the same feeling right now since we couldn't quite pull it out.
They couldn't, but that defense played better. You know, don't get psyched out. Iowa State will play them to death at home next Thursday, so they better not come out bullcrapping. I'm going to say that. Don't play with Iowa State. They will try and beat you. So I hope they get that and they play the same way at Iowa State that they played at USC. And I think I'm going to stick with my yearly prediction for you guys. I see you guys making a bowl game and finishing 8-4, 7-5 if you slip up somewhere. But I see this team getting 8 wins, and I don't think you guys have had 8 wins in 3 or 4 years. So I think that's an improvement. But we'll see.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So it's just it's scary, it's frustrating, but man, I just couldn't believe it. And I mean, and then you got to look at it like this too, Colin. I mean, they went to 2 overtimes. They didn't just quit after the first regulation. They kept fighting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I did not expect the defense, especially the defense, to be able to compete at that level for that amount of time. I thought, you know, especially the second overtime. After the fumble, the defense would just kind of roll over. Like, they'd still be flying around, but they wouldn't be able to keep USC. And I expected USC to try to run the ball just to get a few extra yards, and then they'd break something, score a touchdown to win. But Malik Jefferson almost had a sack that would have put them out of field goal range to force a third overtime. I feel like I should be a lot more happy with this performance, especially as a Texas fan. But Yeah, I think things will be better. Just last thing I want to mention, I've had this kind of sinking feeling ever since the game ended that Ellinger, to me, he reminds me of Garrett Gilbert. Like, Shane Buechele was out with a shoulder injury. Colt McCoy in that 2009 national championship game got knocked out by Bama, shoulder injury. Garrett Gilbert was a true freshman, came in on this big stage. Ellinger, true freshman, comes in against USC, huge stage. And couldn't quite pull out the victory, and everyone's super confident thinking, oh, we found our quarterback and he's going to be the guy to lead. And it reminds me so much of that feeling after the 2009 season with Garrett Gilbert. And I don't know, just the sinking feeling that Ellinger might be not able to live up to the expectations that people have of him after that incredible game.
Yeah. I mean, personally, like, I think Shane Buechele is solid, but at the same time, it's a blessing that you guys have Ellinger, because he's going to keep a fire under Buechele's butt. And I feel like last year sometimes Charlie Strong didn't stay up Shane hard enough. Shane was a little too comfortable, and I feel like that's a lot of times why they didn't play hard that they should have played for Strong. I mean, Strong has a great quarterback this year, and the team he has is undefeated and ranked, you know, top 25. They beat a Power 5 team against Illinois. But I just feel like Ellinger being there is going to force the best out of a Shane, in my opinion.
I agree with that. I think that this is definitely a different team, and Ellinger's performance is going to help Shane Buechele a lot. I still think that Shane's the starter come Iowa State. I know people are thinking that Ellinger is going to take over after the game. I think Buechele is still the better quarterback.
Wow, I'm surprised you went with that. So you think, okay, so you're going with
with the way that the defense played, I think if Shane had been healthy, that game would have gone very differently. I think the Texas offense would not have taken so long to get going if Shane had been the quarterback. He's not the same kind of game-breaker playmaker that Ellinger is, and so I don't think that Shane's going to be the guy that kind of engineers that touchdown drive that Ellinger did at the end of the game. But I think beginning of the game, Ellinger just took so long to get a rhythm, to look like he was comfortable playing quarterback. I think Shane could have led the Texas team to score a couple field goals, if not a touchdown or two, and would have completely changed the tide of that game. I think that Ellinger's just still too young, too raw. You saw a lot of those freshman mistakes in that game against USC, and I think another year behind Shane Buechele would really, really help his development as a quarterback.
Yeah, I think he'll eventually lead the team to some big things by his junior, senior year, depending on if Buechele stays all 4 years or goes to the pros or what happens, or if they end up being able to redshirt in 1 year. But let's go to sorry about that noise. Let's go to this week. And this week we got West Virginia traveling to Kansas. I'm going to go West Virginia 45, Kansas 14. What you got?
I had written down 42 to 10, so about the same thing.
Same. All right. Oklahoma State versus TCU. This is going to be the game everybody's going to be looking their chops for this week in the conference. Let me see what time this game is at, actually. It doesn't say. It just says ESPN. Okay, no, it looks like 3:30, so it'll be 2:30 our time. I'm going to go, good game in the first half, is going to be a fight. Oklahoma State 34 to 49 or 47 to 31, something like that.
Yeah, I've got it 49-45, so a little closer, but I don't think either of these defenses are good enough to stop the offenses if they get clicking. So if Kenny Hill for TCU can get a rhythm early in the game, I think they've got a very good chance to keep it close in a high-scoring game.
Yeah, it will. Man, Gundy has really got that team playing something amazing. It's crazy, unbelievable. Texas Tech at Houston. What do you got? I just think he's coming on.
I think that Texas Tech is gonna lose this game. They're just. Texas
what?
Tech is such a different team
on
the road.
Wow.
I am. I know it's a bit of a bold prediction, but I think that Texas Tech is such a different team on the road. Coming off of a closer game than they would have liked at home this past week, going into Houston. I think that Houston, Major Applewhite, is able to hold the Texas Tech defense a bit. You know, Major played against Texas Tech while he was a quarterback at Texas, and the offense hasn't changed much since then. It's still the same general air raid, very little ground game. I think that Applewhite's going to be able to put together a game plan that holds Tech for long enough that Houston can build up a lead and Tech won't be able to come back. I think it'll be about 38-31 at the end of the game.
Speaking of Applewhite, would you have been a lot happier if he would have took the OC job and didn't take the head Houston job, or are you fine with Tim Beck and you're just trying to wait to see what he finishes the season doing?
At the time, I was happy with Tim Beck. after these first three games, I mean, even against San Jose State, I did not like the play calling and the decision-making by Tim Beck. And at this point, I would have much rather had Major.
Oh. Wow. Well,
but, I mean, there's still a lot of games left in the season. It could turn around.
I mean, but you guys have had so many OCs, Colin, in the last. I mean, you went from Watson to what's the head coach at Nevada now, Jay Norvell, to the guy last year. I mean, yeah, and then now you got Tim Beck. I mean, these guys have literally seen, if Swoops would have redshirted, he would have seen literally four OCs in 4 years.
Yeah, so, if Herman and Tim Beck can pick it up and finish the season strong, then I think he stays. But, I mean, I know I'm not the only person that's seen it. The play calling just has not made any sense to me. I've been around football, been watching Texas football for a very long time, and that's some of the most questionable decision-making that I've seen.
Yeah, and then our fun one this week, which is, I'm being obviously a jerk right now by saying our fun one, but Baylor – Oklahoma at Baylor. I'm going to go Oklahoma. I think Baylor will put up some points and fight hard, but I'm going Oklahoma 42, Baylor 24. And I want to talk about Baylor 1 second before I let you predict it. You know, Matt Rhule, I understand you're doing the Oklahoma drill and warm-ups, but I think it's far more of a problem than that going on in Waco right now. And I'll just say that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be about 45-17. In Baylor's game at Duke, they had three touchdowns. They missed an extra point to get to 20 points. But two of those touchdowns were amazing plays by Chris Platt, their wide receiver. One of them was a screen pass that he took for 70 yards for a touchdown. The other one was just a go route that the Duke safety made just a terrible play on the ball and got himself out of position. So Platt took it the distance again. But outside of those two 70-yard big plays, Baylor had about 150 yards of total offense. They only had 9 first downs the whole game compared to Duke's 24. The defense for Baylor, they're just taking bad angles, missing a lot of tackles. Zach Smith, the new quarterback, doesn't seem much better than a new Solomon. He was 12 of 34 passing through 3 picks. Baylor is a dumpster fire right now. And playing, it doesn't matter that they're going back home. Obviously, they lost those two games at the beginning of the season at home. And they are not in a position to be playing OU right now. I think 45-17 is what I've got as my prediction score, but I would not be at all surprised if OU runs it up and it gets really ugly.
Right, the 60s. Well, that's our Big 12 Nation this week. We'll post this on the page, I feel like, any second. They're going to kick us off the line here and hang up. You can follow Colin on Twitter. Go ahead and give it out.
That's at Ginginese. That's G-I-N-G-I-N-E-S-E.
And you know where to find me. I'm always on the page. Thank you guys so much for listening, downloading, supporting, and let's keep this movement going. And this is Big 12 Nation. We obviously can't wait till week 4 to see what happens. Everybody have a good one. Thanks again, Colin. I'll be in contact with you.
All right, man. Peace.
Peace.